Welcome back, everyone. I know you guys are ready to deep dive into Isaiah's call to be a prophet.
Absolutely. Always a fascinating story.
So we're looking at a lecture by Dr. Marv Wilson, right?
That's right. He unpacks Isaiah chapter 6.
Okay, so chapter 6, that's the one where Isaiah receives his prophetic commission, right?
You know, it's interesting, though.
What's that?
It's not your typical, hey, you're a prophet now kind of thing. It's a full-blown vision. Really powerful stuff.
You're right, it is quite a dramatic scene, especially compared to like some other prophets whose calls seem way more I don't know, casual.
Exactly.
So this vision takes place in 740 BC.
Yeah, right after the death of King Uzziah.
King Uzziah, he was king for a long time, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, 52 years.
52 years. Wow. So this is a big moment for Judah, end of an era, a long era.
Absolutely. Big transition time.
People must have been uncertain, anxious even. I mean, think about it. They've just lost a leader who like brought in this whole period of prosperity and stability.
It's true. You have to wonder what was going through their minds.
Right? What does the future hold? What's next? And in the middle of all that boom, Isaiah has this encounter with God.
It's like God often works that way, doesn't it? During upheaval and uncertainty.
Yeah. Makes you think about your own life, doesn't it? Has God ever called you during like a tough time, a transition?
It definitely makes you reflect on your own experiences.
So Dr. Wilson, he kind of paints this scene for us, right? Isaiah's in the temple, and then.
He sees God sitting on this high and exalted throne. Just incredible imagery.
Wow. But wait, doesn't the Bible say no one can see God and live?
It does, but you have to remember this is a vision. It's symbolic, not a literal seeing of God's essence.
Okay, so like, have you ever like felt someone's presence so strongly you almost thought you could see them even though they weren't actually there?
Yeah, I get that. It's more about feeling that overwhelming presence, the awe of encountering the divine.
Right. Makes sense. But Isaiah is not alone in this vision, is he?
Oh, no, he's got company. There are these beings called seraphim surrounding God's throne.
Seraphim. You know, I've always pictured angels like all graceful and ethereal, you know?
I know what you mean, but these guys are described as burning ones. Definitely more intense.
Yeah, that's quite an image. Burning ones.
Six wings they have, covering their faces and feet.
Sign of reference, I guess.
Exactly. And they're calling back and forth, praising God.
Wait, calling. I thought angels sang, like those beautiful heavenly choirs you see in movies.
That's a common misconception. Angels in the Bible, they speak, they say, not singing.
Oh, interesting. So no angelic choir concert then.
Nope. But still powerful. Imagine these beings with their voices echoing through the temple, declaring God's holiness.
Holy, holy, holy.
That's it. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory.
Holy, holy, holy. They repeat it three times. Like they really want to drive that point home.
For sure. Holiness is central to understanding who God is. It's not just about being good, it's about being set apart, different.
Set apart. Makes me think of how the Hebrew people weren't allowed to worship nature, unlike all the cultures around them.
Exactly. God's holiness sets him apart from creation. He's not just part of it, he's the creator.
Right. And the whole earth is full of his glory, does that mean?
Not that God is the earth, but that his power, his influence, it's everywhere.
Okay, so we're not just talking about creation, but also how God interacts with the world, with us.
Exactly. And this leads to another name for God, Lord of hosts.
Lord of hosts, you could almost say like supreme commander, kind of brings it into modern terms.
It does, doesn't it? It helps us understand that sense of authority.
So you have the supreme commander, this God, on this throne, surrounded by these powerful seraphim. I can see why Isaiah might be a little overwhelmed at this point.
Oh, yeah, and it's about to get even more intense because the temple starts to shake
Oh, wow.
and smoke fills the space.
Whoa, like Mount Sinai.
Exactly. It's a deliberate echo of that moment. God's using a similar display of power here to highlight how significant this moment is for Isaiah.
It's like God saying, pay attention.
This is important.
So, how does Isaiah react to all this?
It's pretty visceral. He cries out, "Woe to me, I am ruined.
Oh, wow.
For I am a man of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty."
The king. That's interesting. It's like he's recognizing God's ultimate authority, especially in light of King Uzziah's recent death.
You're right. It emphasizes that true power rests with God, not earthly rulers.
It's a very human reaction, though, isn't it? This feeling of inadequacy, like I'm not worthy to be in the presence of such greatness.
Absolutely. But how does he go from woe is me to actually becoming a prophet?
That's the question.
Well, one of the seraphim grabs a burning coal from the altar.
Burning coal. Makes you wonder what's about to happen.
Yeah, it's intense. So the seraph, he takes the coal and he touches it to Isaiah's lips.
To his lips. Wow. When I think of fire in the Bible, I think of like purification.
Yeah, right, like refining something, removing impurities.
And it's often connected to, you know, God's presence, like the burning bush.
Oh, absolutely. Or the tongues of fire at Pentecost. Good examples.
It's like fire signifies something powerful, something divine is happening.
Right. So you see those same ideas at play here. Some scholars say this is about prophetic inspiration.
Okay, like God's giving Isaiah his words directly.
Exactly, through this this burning coal. But, you know, you mentioned purification, right? It could also be seen as a mark of ownership. Like a brand.
Ooh, brand. Okay, I see what you mean. Signifying that Isaiah now belongs to God. He's set apart.
That's it. Set apart for a specific purpose. And both of those interpretations, they tie into that Holy Spirit connection you made.
Right, right. That's interesting. Like a foreshadowing of how God empowers people in the New Testament, too.
It is. But you know what?
What?
We still haven't heard the actual words of Isaiah's commission. Dr. Wilson leaves us hanging at this point.
Oh, really? Come on.
He ends the lecture with the Seraphs asking, who shall I send and who will go for us?
Wow. What a powerful question, especially after, you know, everything Isaiah has just experienced.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? Would you have the courage to say yes to that?
Yeah, seriously. What would I do? I mean, Isaiah's first reaction was fear, right? Feeling unworthy.
He did. But now he's facing this direct invitation, this divine mission. Pretty big shift.
Make it think about how God chooses and equips the people he calls, right?
It does.
It's like he often chooses ordinary people, you know, people who might not feel qualified,
right?
But they're willing to surrender, to let God work through them. It's almost like Isaiah's woe is me moment. It made him the perfect candidate.
Interesting point. He recognized his limitations. Maybe that allowed him to be more open to God's power, to God working through his weakness.
Yeah, yeah. So what about you? What stands out to you about Isaiah's reaction?
You know, I keep coming back to that feeling of inadequacy he expresses. Makes me think about those times when I felt overwhelmed, you know?
Totally. We've all been there.
It's comforting to know that even even great prophets like Isaiah, they felt doubt, fear.
Yeah, he's human, just like us.
Exactly. It humanizes the whole experience, and it shows that God doesn't always pick the most, you know, confident or self-assured people.
Right. It's about humility, recognizing our need for God.
Exactly. Okay, but we can't leave everyone hanging forever. What happens next?
Does he say yes? Does Isaiah embrace the call? So what's the answer? Does Isaiah accept the mission?
He does. He says, here am I, send me.
Wow. What a powerful response, from woe is me to send me. He really turned that around.
Talk about a transformation, right? But you know what's interesting?
What's that?
The message God gives him is, well, it's a little bit disheartening. God tells him to say, be ever hearing, but never understanding. Be ever seeing, but never perceiving.
Wait, what? That's kind of harsh, isn't it? Why would God give him a message that people are basically going to ignore?
It seems like a paradox, I know. But think about it this way. It's like God is preparing Isaiah.
Preparing him.
Yeah, for the reality of his ministry. God's not sugarcoating things. He's being upfront, telling it like it is.
So it's going to be tough. People's hearts will be hardened, closed off.
It's not going to be easy, but it's still important.
Right. So it's more about obedience than results.
Exactly. Isaiah's success isn't about how many people he convinces, but how faithfully he delivers God's message.
Even if no one listens.
Even if no one listens.
Wow. That's it's a powerful lesson, you know, for anyone who's ever felt called to, I don't know, to speak up. To say something true, even when it's hard.
Absolutely. Our responsibility is to be faithful, not necessarily successful.
Right, right. To trust that God can work through us, even when we don't see the immediate impact.
Exactly. But there's a glimmer of hope in all of this.
Oh, tell me there's a happy ending somewhere in this story.
Well, God tells Isaiah that even though people will choose to not understand, his message will still have a refining effect.
What does that mean, refining?
Like a purification process. Even in their rejection, there's a chance for people to, you know, to change, to experience God's healing.
So even when things seem, I don't know, hopeless?
God's mercy is always there, his desire for restoration.
That's encouraging. Well, this deep dive into Isaiah's call, it's been amazing. It feels like we just, you know, scratched the surface.
I agree. There's so much to unpack in this story.
So much. So what was the biggest takeaway for you?
You know, for me, it's that reminder that God doesn't call us based on our strengths. He often chooses the humble. Those willing to, you know, to surrender to his will.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. It makes me wonder, how would we react if we were in Isaiah's shoes, face to face with God, given this this difficult mission?
It's a great question to think about. It challenges us to examine our own hearts, to consider how we'd respond to God's call in our lives.
It does. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Isaiah's call. We hope you learned something new. And until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep exploring God's word.